The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Coming to you live from the WGBB studios here in West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240. I'm Andrew Joseph, going strong here tonight from 9 to 10 on this Sunday, August 17th evening. I hope all of you have had a great weekend as we get closer and closer now to the end of August and the month of September. Brian Graves is on the other side of the glass. The phone number tonight is 631-888-8811. Plenty on the slate tonight. Here on this Sunday evening, the Jets. We'll talk with Seth Walder of the New York Daily News. He'll join us at around 9:10 as we get to chat with Seth about all things New York Jets football. Obviously, they played last night. They defeated the Bengals. The New York Giants came from behind to defeat the Indianapolis Colts. A lot going on in baseball. Yankees are winners of two straight now as they stand 3.5 games out in the AL wild card race. 7 games out in the AL East. You can kiss that division goodbye. But as poorly as the Yankees have played and as up and down as they have been all season long, only 3.5 out and very much still in it, which speaks to the level of play in the American League and the National League, for that matter, all of baseball this year. The parity in baseball is really something to talk about, because through the last four, five, six years, even maybe going back 10 years now, you've heard baseball should have a salary cap like the other sports. It's not fair that the Yankees, Red Sox, and the Mets and these teams can just outspend the rest of baseball. But it's interesting, baseball doesn't have a salary cap yet. There's more parity in the game of baseball than there is in the other pro sports. The NBA, there's a few teams every year that have a legitimate chance of winning. The NFL, there's more than a few teams, but for the most part, it's either the teams with the great quarterbacks or the great defenses. It's going into the season, you can say, probably name about 5, 6, 7 teams that have a really, really good shot at winning the Super Bowl. Right now, Major League Baseball, how many teams can you say that about? There are a lot of teams in baseball that right now can honestly think that they have a legitimate chance at winning the World Series. And there's no salary cap in baseball. So, I've always found that very interesting how, if you look at the four main sports in this country right now at this time, Major League Baseball has the most parity, yet there's no salary cap. But we're going to start with the New York Jets tonight, because that was truly, truly a tale of positives and negatives for the Jets. You're talking about, I'm going to start with the positives. Geno Smith, I was really impressed with him. I thought he played well, 10 for 13, threw that interception, which it's really hard to say if that's his fault or if that was David Nelson's fault. Did Nelson not turn around quick enough? Honestly, we'll never know. We don't know what exactly Nelson was supposed to be doing on that play, and we don't know exactly what Geno was supposed to be doing on that play. But overall, Geno looked good. Didn't throw for a touchdown, but ran for one. I was really impressed with his pocket presence. He showed good pocket presence all game long. And the offense in general, I was really impressed with the offense on an overall basis. I thought Chris Johnson finally showed some explosiveness. What you didn't see it in preseason game one. You didn't see it, and according to all the beat writers and reporters that cover the team on a daily basis in training camp, they didn't see that throughout the camp. But I was impressed by Chris Johnson and some of his explosiveness. Bilal Powell played well. I was very impressed by this offense. On the defensive side, though, of course, look, you got the secondary troubles. We all know not bringing back Cromartie, they not replacing him with an elite corner, relying on Milliner. He got hurt. Patterson got hurt. And having to convert Antonio Allen from safety to corner, having Lankster, who's mainly a special teams player, playing the number two cornerback position, it's a big concern for the Jets fans. And they, based on what you saw with A.J. Green and Andy Dalton just tearing the Jets secondary up 8-for-8, it's really not too comforting for Jets fans as they look at the secondary right now. But also, you got to understand, I mean, this defense is built on the front seven, a dominant front seven, which they didn't show it last night, but I still, and I would say most Jets fans and most NFL people would agree that they still have a dominant front seven. They just didn't live up to it last night in a preseason game. But when the front seven is not getting to the quarterback, it's going to put a lot of pressure on this depleted secondary, and you saw that last night. And with the front seven putting pressure, consistent pressure on the quarterback, I think the secondary will be able to hold up, especially once you get some of these guys back. Dee Milliner, who, look, I mean, we have no idea what to expect from him. I know he thinks he's going to be the best cornerback in the league. We all know that's ridiculous. But is it ridiculous to expect him to be a solid number one corner? I don't think so. He finished the season very strong last year. It's year two of his career, a guy that has so much talent. You could see it. And I would expect a good season from him. But, you know, is he going to be ready for week one for the Raiders week one? We don't know. But like I said, overall, the offense, very impressive. The defense had its ups and downs. I would say overall, though, I wouldn't be that concerned about this defense. With the front seven the way it is, the amount of pass rushers they have, I wouldn't be too concerned about this defense. I really wouldn't. The offense is going to be the concern going throughout the season, like it has been throughout the Rex Ryan era. But the defense I don't worry about, and the offense I was impressed by, I really was. You know, I think you would like to see Stephen Hill step up. And we, for the first time, I think, since the Jets drafted him, we saw some emotion from him. Him fighting back. We'll see if that translates into some success this season, because I honestly don't know. But up to now, he's been a bust. But I wouldn't label him as a bust just yet, just because he's going through his third year, which typically is thought as to be the breakout year for wide receivers, that third season. So we'll see if Stephen Hill is able to get the job done. But, you know, it's going to be a really interesting week three preseason between the Jets and Giants. As for the Giants, they had an interesting night last night. And there's two ways to look at this game from a Giants fan perspective. Option one, or A, is you look at it and you say, our starters got dominated. The Giants starters versus the Colts starters, it was not even close. The Colts dominated both sides of the ball. Giants couldn't move the ball. Eli went for 6, still struggling with this new offense. They couldn't stop the Colts. Andrew Luck doing whatever he wanted to. And then there's the second way to look at it, the optimistic way, the glass half full way, and say, well, the NFL, more than any of the other professional sports in this country, especially the four main sports, is all about the depth. You need not only depth, you need quality depth in the NFL to succeed, to make the playoffs, let alone to win the Super Bowl. And so you can look at it and say, well, the Giants' second unit, they showed that they have very good depth, that they did it in both games now. The second unit outplayed the opponent's second unit. So that's a glass half full outlook on the Giants. And then obviously the other one was, you know, the starters are just getting outplayed, dominated last night by the Colts. But the Giants do come back and they defeat the Colts, the Jets top, the Cincinnati Bengals, both teams 2-0 in the preseason as they prepare for Friday night's Jets-Giants matchup. And it's going to be a good one because the third week of preseason is the week where not only do the starters play the first half, but they come out in the second half and play some of the second half. A lot of times they play the whole third quarter. In some situations they play even a little bit into the fourth quarter. So there's a lot to look at here. I mean, the Jets, you should be excited for that. Obviously, the winner doesn't really mean anything. No. If you're a Jets fan, you want to see improvement in the secondary. You want to see that front seven get to the quarterback. You want to see Geno continue to impress. And if you're a Giants fan, you want to see Eli Manning get this together right now. Because a new system and the West Coast offense, and so far through two preseason games, Giants fans, I'm sure you're very unimpressed by this offense. And Eli Manning has looked like he has no idea what's going on. But, you know, it's only two preseason games, and I'm not willing to bet against Eli Manning. I know he had a poor year last year through a lot of interceptions, a lot of them on him, a lot of them on his receivers, but I do believe Eli Manning will have a bounce back year. And look, I mean, look, it's a new system. It's not going to just show right away. I mean, you're not going to, it's going to take some time. It may even take a few weeks into the regular season before Eli Manning finally gets going and this offense finally takes off, but they have the talent. I think the Giants will have an improved running game, and I really expect that to help Eli Manning even more, and I do believe that Eli and the offense will be fine. A couple new members of the offensive line. Some question marks. I mean, the offensive line is a concern. The new offense is a concern. The defensive line a concern, which is the opposite of what it's been the last few years. But yes, the defensive line is now a concern. The secondary looks to be sharp. But you know, I do think that both the Jets and Giants, I think you're a fan right now. One thing I've noticed is that there's been a lot of negativity. Jets fans are in panic mode about the secondary, specifically the cornerback situation. A lot of them are already want Geno Smith out. And Giants fans, you know, this new offense isn't working. Eli's not good. The D-line, the O-line, no good. But too much panic, too much negativity coming from Giants and Jets fans at this point. And you expect it from Jets fans because, you know, look, Jets fans have been crushed time and time again. While Giants fans, you would expect a little less because of the two Super Bowls recently. But still, too much negativity. I think I look at both these teams as, look, glass half full right now. I expect the Jets to be a good 9-10 win team, and I expect the Giants to be around 8-9-10 wins as well this season. It should be a fun season. We're going to take a quick break right here, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Seth Walder of the New York Daily News. You're listening to Sports Talk 1240.
WGBB has time slots available for anyone who wants to host their own radio show. 516-623-1240. You've probably just asked yourself, what kind of show could I do? Well, let me ask you, what are you passionate about? Is it books, cooking, music? How about health and wellness? Or maybe you enjoy learning and talking about history, current events. Interview others in their related fields. 516-623-1240. You can host a show at a station that's been a part of our community for over 80 years. And our knowledgeable staff will be more than happy to assist you. Be heard on the internet. www.am1240wgbb.com. So what do you say? I say call Jeff or Trevor. 516-623-1240. Be the producer. Host your own radio program. 516-623-1240. WGBB, the station that serves your community.
While cutting molding with a 12-inch dual compound miter saw, while holding a newborn baby in your arms, when face-to-face with a congregation of alligators, with the ball in your hands and the entire freaking season on the line.
There are a million places you'd never consider texting, so why would you do it while driving? NASCAR driver Casey Kane here, asking you to please stop the text, and together we can stop the wrecks.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Get the message at stoptextstopwrecks.org.
Welcome back to Sports Talk 1240. I want to take this time to tell you about Challenger 2, the e-commerce site that takes care of your check cashing needs and proves additional services including money transfer and a utility bill pay. You can learn more about Challenger at kcashing.com. We welcome Seth Walder of the New York Daily News. He covers the Jets. We welcome Seth to the program. Hi, Seth.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm good, Seth. How are you?
I'm doing great.
So, Seth, last night, what are some of your impressions of the game? I opened my show talking about how I was pretty impressed with the offense for the most part, and I'm not in as much panic mode about the secondary as most Jets fans are. What are your impressions?
Well, let's start with the secondary. I think that I definitely think it's a cause for concern. I think if you're a Jets fan, you ought to be worried about the secondary. I think, and I say that believing in Dee Milliner. I think that Milliner, when he comes back, assuming that he is able to get fully healthy and return and not have this injury linger, I think that he can be a good cornerback this year. But, of course, we don't know if that injury is going to linger. And then on top of that, on the other side, I really haven't seen what the answer is going to be because, to me, Dimitri Patterson has not looked good in training camp and the preseason. So even if he's healthy, that's a problem. And if you're talking about moving Antonio Allen there, I thought Antonio maybe did some good things last night aside from that 35-yard gain by A.J. Green. This guy just started playing cornerback. I mean, that's a tall task for anyone. And so I think there's definitely some concern there. On the offensive side of the ball, I did think they played pretty well. I thought Geno Smith was solid, not excellent, but solid last night. And the running game looked good against the Bengals. So, yeah, there's some optimism there if you're looking at that. But it's still very much up in the air, especially with that secondary.
If the secondary does play up to Rex's standard, at least what he wants us to believe is his standards, how good could this defense be? Because to me, I look at this front seven, I know they didn't do much last night, but I think we could all agree that it's a dominant front seven. So if this secondary is able to play up to par and hold their own, how good could this defense be?
Yeah, if the secondary is good, I think you can easily be looking at top five defense like Rex Ryan wants. You're right. The front seven is elite, but didn't necessarily play that way last night. I think that, there's certainly downside potential from guys like David Harris and Calvin Pace if you want to have the negative view of that just because they're veterans. But, I do think the front seven is really strong, and if the secondary is good, this defense can be really, really good.
And Seth, what if the secondary plays awful? What if every concern the Jets fans has right now about the secondary comes true? Can this pass rush, can this front seven overcome it?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that would be enough because I think that's what you basically saw last season. We saw Milliner struggle. Antonio Cromartie was injured and did not play well all through the year. And he ultimately ended up with the 11th best defense in the league, and maybe they were even lucky to be that good. So I think that would not be enough to carry this team in the playoffs. I think that an absolutely critical part for this team is that secondary.
So this is something that drives Jets fans crazy because Itzik comes on when he's asked by reporters about, you know, if he would have done anything different looking back now with all the injuries, and he said he has no regrets about the way he dressed the corner position in the offseason. I mean, do you actually believe that he has no regrets, or is he just saving face?
Well, I think that Idzik would never admit if he did have regrets. I think that to him, he doesn't want to pay out any more than he believes the appropriate value is for a certain player. But to me, I think the other side of that coin is you got $21 million in cap room, and you're looking at a huge potential upgrade at a critical position, cornerback, that is absolutely key in Rex Ryan's defense. You've got guys like Vontae Davis, Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, and Darrell Revis out there on the market. I think you should have gone and gotten one of them. So, to me, yeah, would you have paid it maybe a little bit more than you would have liked? Yes, but the cost is not nearly as much because you have the money. So, to me, that was a mistake. I mean, I do think that if they had done that, they would have had a really complete offseason, and they were just missing that last piece.
Seth, the one name you said that all Jets fans wonder about was Darrell Revis. And what do you have any insight on why they didn't go after him? Because all the reports said that Revis wanted to come back. He loves playing for Rex Ryan. And, I mean, look, we could all imagine how much Rex would have wanted him back. I mean, I'm sure Rex, as soon as Revis was cut, was knocking on Isaac's door, telling him to get Revis. So do you have any insight on why they didn't go after Revis?
Well, I think that, I suppose it's only speculation at a certain point, but I just think that John Idzik came in They wanted, they did not want to spend the kind of money on Revis that Revis wanted. It was sort of ugly at the end, and there were probably bad feelings there, and I think that it just, it wasn't going to work out, I guess, just because Johnny Dick and Woody Johnson didn't want to put the past behind them and allow Revis back. To me, I would have said, you know, let's just get over it. Realize that we're talking about one of the great corners in the game, maybe one of the great corners of all time, and bring him back here. But I think they didn't want to do that. They wanted to go another direction, and they did. But gosh, Dimitri Patterson sure looks like a different world than Darrell Revis.
Yeah, I mean that's to be assumed. All right, going to the offense, Seth. In your opinion, who's the number two wide receiver on this team right now? Because, I mean, we obviously know Eric Decker's the number one. You look at, I mean, is Stephen Hill the number two right now? Is it David Nelson?
Well, I think that the second outside receiver, I mean, Curley really is the second option.
Yes.
As a receiver, but of course he's in the slot. To me, I would rather have Nelson out there, and I don't think that Nelson is outstanding by any means, but I just do not believe in Stephen Hill, and you know the coaches have talked him up this season as they've done in the past, but I don't see it out there on the practice field. I don't see it in the games. I think the drops are still an issue. To me, I wouldn't put Stephen Hill out there if I were running the show. You know, not in that starting position. I would have him on the team just because of his potential, but I'm not buying Stephen Hill.
Yeah, last night he made this catch over his head, which was called back because of a penalty. And we were, I was like, wow, I didn't know you could do that. And the thing is, it's not even a big deal. It's a catch that every wide receiver in the NFL should make. But because of how much trouble he's had catching the ball since he's been here, it was like a big deal.
That's right. I had that same reaction when he caught that ball, and it's almost a surprise when he brings that in. It shouldn't be that way. You're right. It shouldn't be that way.
All right, sticking with the offense here, the rookie tight end Amaro, what have you seen from him up to this point? And is there a chance that, because you know all Jets fans are hoping that this is true, that he can end up being that Jimmy Graham, Gronkowski, Witten, Tony Gonzalez, or maybe going back a few years, Antonio Gates type player?
I think that right now with Jason Amaro, it's going to be a project. I think it's going to take time. I think he's at a rough training camp. There's no question about it. Just he's had trouble with some drops, which shouldn't have been an issue. That was not really part of his reputation. And he's also struggled just picking up the offense. And yeah, it's going to take time, of course, picking the offense as a rookie. But he's just been a little bit slower than I imagined the team would like. I think he's seen some progress in recent days. So that's probably. If you're a Jets fan, you'll like to hear that, but whether it can be a Jimmy Graham or Rob Gronkowski, that's a long way off, and I think that's really high hopes for a guy. You know, he was a second-round pick, and I think that he had a lot of production in college, but I don't know. That seems like maybe a bit much to ask.
So, Seth, this Wildcat offense, which has been a part of the Jets' offense every now and then for the last few years, especially back when Brad Smith ran it, to me, with Vic running the Wildcat, I think that's a terrible idea. I think it's just asking for an injury, asking for problems. What's your take on the Wildcat, though?
I agree with you because I don't think that the payoff that you're looking at is going to be enough to offset the risk of Vic's injury. And to me, I also just think that we've seen before, it does disrupt the rhythm. I don't think that Monty Morningwood even argues that point. It does disrupt the rhythm of Geno Smith. If you're going to have Vic in the game, you got to take Geno out also. I don't see any point having the two of them on the field at the same time because the reality is you're playing 11 against 10 at that point. So if you were to be actually a Wildcat quarterback, you're playing 11 against 10. If you were to substitute for Geno, fine, but I guess why wouldn't he just be your quarterback if you want him in there? I don't think it's a good idea. I would not do it if I were the Jets.
But do you think that they will? Would you be surprised if they do run the Wildcat this year with Vic?
I won't be surprised, but I don't think that it's going to happen a lot. I don't think that we're going to see it to the extent that we saw with Tebow a couple of years ago.
Yeah, when Tebow took the ball and ran right into the line. So
every single time.
Every single time. So, stick with his offense still. Chris Ivory. What is with, he had the rib injury, right? Do you know, are you aware of his injury status?
Yeah, I think we're talking about bruised rib. I don't think it's going to be something that's going to hamper him through the season, but, you know, I was talking to Anthony Lynn, the running backs coach, the other day, and he said, I said, you know, Rex doesn't seem overly concerned. He said, well, I'm concerned. It's a rib injury for a power back, but I think that really means they want to get him healthy, and they just want to make sure he's right, especially given that he's had injury issues in the past, to get him right for the season, and I don't think there's any reason that they shouldn't take that cautious approach, which they seem to be doing.
Is the key for Chris Johnson, who, to me, for the first time since I've seen him, showed some real explosiveness last night, is the key for him to stay healthy during the preseason, or is it important to see some more explosiveness from him, say next week against the Giants?
I think you just want to stay healthy. You want to get Chris Johnson through the preseason, just be 100% ready to go. He's a veteran. He knows what to do to get in shape. And I would expect for him, he'll be ready to go in week one, and you just don't want him to get hurt to the Jets. So, just get him through the games, especially since you saw, like you said, a little bit of explosiveness last night from him.
Seth, how do you see them mixing Johnson, Ivory, and Powell, who looked good last night, and it was pretty good last year? How do you see them mixing them all into the running game? And is it important to keep Chris Johnson to a certain amount of touches to keep him fresh throughout the regular season?
Yeah, I do think that it is important to limit Johnson's rushes. I think that the team talks about this, quote, three-headed monster. It's not going to be an equal share between the three, but I do believe that all three guys will get carries. I think that Chris Johnson will get, ultimately, if everybody's healthy through the whole season, Johnson will have more carries than anyone else, but not necessarily by a wide margin, and I would expect Chris Ivory to be that goal line back. So I think that ultimately it'll probably be a good thing for Chris Johnson to have a little bit of a less, a lightened workload. And that might end up paying dividends for them.
And Seth, lastly, Jalen Saunders, the wide receiver, the rookie, had that car accident a few days ago. Do you know the status of him or his status?
Yeah, you know what? I'll be honest. It's a bit of a mystery right now. You know, I'll give credit to friends over at NJ.com who spoke to the police and who told them that they didn't think that it was a car accident. So we're still waiting on word from that. But last we heard, Rex Ryan last night was that Jalen Saunders was still in the hospital.
Interesting. Okay. Well, Seth, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thank you. That was Seth Walder of the New York Daily News giving us some time to talk about the New York Jets. When it comes to taxes, you need someone you can rely on. JND and Associates are as reliable as they come. JND and Associates are located just off exit 105 on the Garden State Parkway in Eatontown, New Jersey. We'll break. And when we come back, we'll talk Giants football. And don't go anywhere. Stay here. Sports Talk 1240.
Sports Radio New York and AM 1240 WGBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to live broadcasts online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan, or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you could find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NICK-A. That's 877-TRY-NICK-A. Or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip chain, use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
Welcome back to the program, Sports Talk 1240 here on WGBB. I'm going to open up the phones now to calls. We can talk about Jets, Giants, Yanks, Mets, anything New York sports. And we go to the phones right now. You're on the air.
Hi. I had a question about the Giants.
Yeah, sorry. What's your name?
Jason.
Oh, Jason. Yeah. What's up about the Giants?
I was wondering if you think they can get 10 wins this year.
You know, I think they can. As I said earlier in the show, the thing with the Giants, there's question marks. There's a lot of concerns. You look at the O-line, you look at the D-line, and the new offense. I mean, so far Eli hasn't showed an ability to really – that he hasn't shown that he's adapted to this new offensive system quite yet. And then going off what he did last season, you'd be concerned. But, you know, I think they have the talent on both sides of the ball. So in the secondary and defense – in the passing game, in the running game, on the offense, I still trust Eli Manning as a quarterback, despite what I just said. So, I mean, do I think they can win 10 games, Jason? Yeah, I do, but I wouldn't be very optimistic about it at the moment. But I would say somewhere in the range of 8 to 10 games. What do you think?
Yeah, I would say probably about 8 or 9. I think the thing about Eli Manning is that we know that he's a streaky quarterback, and hopefully he can prove that last year was an anomaly, but I guess we'll have to see.
No, I agree, and I think Eli Manning is much better than the way he played last year. And look, I mean, you're right, we're going to have to wait and see. I mean, he's going to have to prove some of his critics wrong, because there are those critics out there. And, you know, going into last season, people were talking about how he's finally an elite quarterback, how he's a top-five quarterback, and then he played the way he did last season. So he's going to have to answer the critics again. I mean, he's going to have to show everyone that he is an elite quarterback. And Jason, thanks for the call. And I like Eli's chances. I really do. You know, as a Jets fan, I can honestly say 100% I would take Eli Manning as my starting quarterback. And I do think, despite a bad year last year and adapting to a new system, I do believe Eli will have a good year.
Andrew.
Hey, thanks for the call, Jason. So, a little reaction to the Seth Walder interview. Seth basically seemed very cautiously optimistic about this team. And I understand that. I mean, I think the secondary is a big concern. And the way he talked about Patterson makes you think that even if this guy is healthy, it's not a good thing. Because the way he described how Patterson played in training camp, it was not a very glowing review. And that, to say the least. So, you know, if you're, you know, Jets fans, you should be concerned about the secondary. I think you should, but I don't think you should be in panic mode. They just played two games of preseason football. So I wouldn't be in panic mode just yet. Plus there was definitely some positive things. The one thing I forgot to ask, and I really wish I did ask Seth about, was Calvin Pryor. And I mean, Calvin Pryor didn't play in the first game in week one of preseason because of a concussion, but he was all over the field last night. I mean, everywhere. Could it be two defensive rookies of the year in a row drafted by John Idzik? I don't know. It may be too early to say that, but it was just one preseason game, and if I'm gonna not panic about poor play in preseason games, and I shouldn't go on and say that this guy's a great player, that Pryor's going to have a great season just because of one good preseason game. But For Jets fans, you should be really, really happy with the way Calvin Pryor played last night. He recovered a fumble. He forced a couple of completions. He was hitting. What was he known for when they drafted in the scouting reports? A hard hitter. And the key to hitting hard in the NFL is hitting legally. So you're not getting personal fouls. You're not getting suspended. And last night he did both. He hit hard, he hit often, and he hit legally. So I guess he did all three things. And I think overall, though, the defense, the first unit defense did not look good, but I still think they're going to come around. I think the secondary with D. Milliner will be adequate, and I think the front seven will carry this defense. But one other aspect that I want to get to about the New York Jets that really worries me is the team's discipline. I mean, throughout the Rex Ryan era, even when they made their two Super Bowl runs, I mean, sorry, AFC Championship runs, they have had a discipline problem. And I think it's on Rex. I mean, I don't think he has disciplined his team enough over the years. And I know this camp, he tried to do it more so. He added a push-ups for penalties consequence type thing. Way too many personal fouls last night. I don't think it's working out. And about the secondary, you know, Rex, I got a quote from Rex Ryan post-game last night. And look, when it comes to Rex Ryan in the post-game, look, he's going to defend his players. It's what he does. I mean, he is a loyal coach. It's almost frustrating sometimes because you don't know if he actually means it or if it's just him being him and doing what he does best, and he defends his players. He loves his players. And so when he was asked to evaluate the secondary, he said, now I'm paraphrasing, I don't know. It doesn't matter what I evaluate them. I know you guys are going to write about it all you want. Obviously, we've got some work to do. We'll sort it out. He can make you look better, referring to Green, AJ Green. We said that going into it. You put guys at risk when you double him. I'm fired up because I know we're a lot better than what we're giving credit for. I recognize we've got some work to do. There's no question. So, you know, Rex, he does what he does. It's Rex being Rex. What is it? A few days ago, he talks up Antonio Allen, moving him from safety to corner. When he covered Jimmy Graham last season, Jimmy Graham last season when they played the Saints, he did a great job. So why can't he cover some great receivers? Jimmy Graham is essentially a great wide receiver, which is true, but that's one game. And you're asking safety to convert the corner and shut down team's top receivers. I mean, that's not easy. That's not easy at all. We're going to open up the phone, 631-888-8811. That's 631-888-8811. As we go, we have someone on the line right now.
Hi.
You're on Sports Talk 1240.
Hello?
Hello, you're on Sports Talk 1240.
Hi, this is Alex.
Hey, Alex, how you doing?
Good. So I wanted to talk about the new penalty enforcement in the NFL. I don't know if you've seen some of these preseason games.
Yes. What's your take on it?
So I was watching the Patriots and Eagles game last night, and there were 21 penalties called. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on how you think that's going to affect the pace of the game, fan reaction, and lastly, how you think that's going to affect the Jets personally, because as we know, the Jets are known for, you know, physical defense in the secondary, and their penalty count could go up even more in this next season.
Well, you know, that idea kind of frightens me, because the Jets took a lot of penalties, a lot of defensive holding penalties last season, but I do think it's definitely a possibility. You know, it all goes back to the Seahawks, and everybody was complaining around the league about how the way they played defense, putting their hands on receivers, and the rest of the league really thought that they got away with that. And so the NFL came into some scrutiny because of that. So I think that due to that, that has had a lot to do with the changes. But honestly, Alex, as the year goes on, I think you're going to see that kind of fall off. I think they'll go into the year, the officials will go in calling it tighter. And as the year goes on, I think you'll see it kind of fall back to normal.
Yeah, I agree. As far as the penalties go, I mean, I already didn't like where the league was going. You know, I think the league is turning kind of a a cushy offensive fantasy football league. Now they say they're trying to enforce it more, but I'm sure by the time the postseason around, it'll be back to old school football and the refs keeping the flags in their pockets. But you know, I was just hoping that the flags, you know, stay where they are.
Well, you know, Alex, this all goes back to the whole argument between the old-fashioned football fan, the new type of football fan. With all the concussions, with all the injuries, with all the lawsuits, the NFL has really tried to crack down on or really protect the player's safety. And, you know, in doing so, protect their own safety from lawsuits and whatnot. But, you know, the NFL is... It's a hitting league. I mean, it's a violent game. You can't play football and without taking a huge risk of getting injured. All these players know it. They're getting paid a lot of money to do it. And, you know, injuries are part of the game. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you should not try to limit it. I agree that the NFL should limit it. At times, though, I do understand fans' frustration that it's annoying. I mean, it's really frustrating to watch a good football play. They call a penalty, and you're looking at the replay saying, what else could he have done? Let him go? So, but Alex, actually, now you mentioned the penalties that they're tending up on. Have you noticed what they're trying in preseason with the extra points moving it back?
I have not noticed that.
They've pushed it back, I think, 10 yards, something that they might do next regular season, not this coming season, to make it so it's not as automatic as an extra point, but
yeah.
I mean, still, it's like a 30, I don't know, it's like, I think probably like a 35 yarder now, maybe a 40 yarder. Still, I mean, it's still an easy field goal for most NFL kickers, but I thought it was an interesting thing. I kind of like it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the extra point as it is now is kind of a joke. I mean, something that's converted, what, 99.9% of the time shouldn't be in the game.
Well, I agree. I mean, going back to what we were just talking about, injuries, why would you have an unnecessary play that, like you said, is converted over 99% of the time? Why would you make guys hit each other on the line and risk injury for no reason?
Exactly. Well, thank you, Andrew. Good show, as always.
Thank you, Alex. Thanks for the call. I mean, it really is interesting. And, you know, the NFL, and I love it. I mean, this country loves the NFL. It's so exciting to watch. But it has its problems. It has its flaws. But it's a hard line to follow. Do you want to limit the hitting? Do you want to limit the injuries? But will that, at what cost? Will that affect the integrity of the game? It's a really close call, and the NFL has to deal with it. We have a call online. We go to the lines. You're on Sports Talk 1240.
Hi, this is Michael, longtime Jets fan. Thank you for taking the call.
Oh, thanks, Mike. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. So I just wanted to know what your thoughts are about Vic's role on the team, and just more specifically, how long you think Rex will give Geno if he's playing poorly before he gives Vic the chance at the starting job?
Good questions. First, I think Vic is the backup quarterback. I think they realized what they did wrong with Mark Sanchez, that they gave him the job and they didn't have a real legitimate backup pushing him. They never had that real legitimate option that'd be like, okay, Sanchez, you're not playing well, we're going to bench you. They wanted to have that with Geno, and I really think that what Vic is, he's a backup quarterback as of right now that pushes Geno to compete, to be as best and as good as he can be. And at the same time, if Geno falters, he's that backup quarterback, and this leads into your second question, that he is more than capable, as he has proven throughout his career, to step in and lead an NFL team to victories. And honestly, I look throughout the NFL, Mike, at backup quarterbacks. Vic is, if he's not the best, he's right up there among the best backup quarterbacks in the NFL. So I think, yeah, one, he pushes Geno, and two, he's right there. And if Geno does not play well for a couple weeks, I would say maybe 3 weeks. If Geno comes out week one, week two, week three, plays poorly, I would not be surprised to see Mike Vick in there week four.
Okay. Yep, thank you.
Thanks for the call, Mike. you know, I really, at first, when they first brought in Vic, I was thinking, well, they're going to make Vic the starting quarterback, and this is going to be another mess for the Jets. This is another Jets move. But then, you know, as they've met in training camp, as Geno's assumed that starting role, it seems like, I know, I'm really in favor of the move. And I don't want to put Michael Vick in that Wildcat slot. I want him to be the backup quarterback, be healthy, be ready to step in if Geno falters. And at the same time, I think that's really helping Geno. And also, another thing you've noticed, and all the reporters are talking about it, you see on the telecast, you could see them being all buddy-buddy. Geno and Vick seem to be very close, and that can only help Geno. I mean, Vick has been through it all. He's had his ups, and as we all know, Michael Vick has had his downs. And I really think that him as the backup quarterback is really going to help Geno Smith going forward. I would now want to transfer over here to baseball. With only about 12 minutes left in the program here on Sports Talk 1240, I want to talk about the Mets. And as the Mets stand here, a team not going to the playoffs. Yes, I know Mets fans, they want, you want your hope, you have your hopes, you have your dreams, but no, this team clearly not going to the playoffs this year, but a team that has a future and a team that's played a lot better this year than a lot of people expected, a lot better than they had the last couple of seasons. And when I look at the Mets, I think I'm not a Mets fan, but for Mets fans, there's one thing to look forward to. You want this team to get to 500 by the end of the season. If they can get to 500, Mets fans, you should be very happy with this team. Right now at 59-66, 7 games under 500, it's not too much to ask for them to finish at 500, and I think that would be a major accomplishment for the Mets. Going forward, I really like this team. I mean, how much young starting pitching does this team have? And obviously the obvious question is, pitching prospects do they trade to get a big-time hitter? Some people will say they want Tulowitzki, but Tulowitzki just had surgery. A lot of those Mets fans that wanted Tulowitzki a couple weeks ago now want Starlin Castro. The Cubs have a boatload of infield prospects. Javier Baez has just come up, and he's played really well, along with a few others, and they're a team that it would seem like they'd be in need of a future ace. So do you trade one or two of your future aces in the Mets system for Starlin Castro to bring in your everyday shortstop? The Mets need offensive help and need it badly. And the shortstop has been a huge hole for this team for a couple of years now. Starlin Castro seems like he would be a perfect fit, given both teams' trade needs, Castro's play, his ability. He's young. He's already a proven two-time All-Star in the major leagues, in the National League specifically. So that seems like it would be a good option. But now how far do you want to go? If the Cubs, or Theo Epstein, the general manager of the Chicago Cubs, is asking for Zach Wheeler, do you want to do that? I would assume not. What about Syndergaard? My point is, where do you draw the line in order to get Castro? Because I know a lot of Mets fans I've talked to, they want to say, oh, we'll trade them Montero for Castro. And look, it's going to take, and then they'll say, oh, we'll throw in some B-level prospects also. I don't think that's going to get it done. I think Castro is a top five, probably a top five shortstop in Major League Baseball right now. A young guy with a lot of potential to get better and better, room to grow. And I do wonder if that will be enough to get Castro. But for the Mets, 59-66, they played some good baseball. You've seen some positives from Lucas Duda, from some of the youngsters in the outfield. You've seen the pitching as of right now, it's really good. The young prospects that they have, it's just going to get better and better. Obviously, Harvey coming back next year, you would expect him to pick up right where he left off as a dominant ace and a top three, four, probably a top three young, out of the young aces in the game, probably one of the top three best, I would say. And so the Mets, I'm looking forward to their future. I mean, I'm not a Mets fan, but there's a lot of things to be excited about. There really is. And going over to the Yankees, what playoff chances do they have left? They're 63-59, seven games out in the American League East, you can kiss that goodbye. But the wild card race, you know, 3.5 out, they're there. I mean, it's unbelievable to say, as up and down, as inconsistent as this Yankees team has been, as just offensively challenged as they have been, they're right there. 3.5 games out of the wild card. And it's, look, I mean, I know a lot of baseball fans are just waiting for the Yankees to make that run. Every time it seems like they're about to make that turn, they start playing poorly. And then every time they start playing poorly and it seems like they're falling out of it, they turn around with two straight wins like they had the last 2 days. So the Yankees 3.5 out of the wild card. I personally do not expect them to make the playoffs this year, but at the same time, we're not counting them out. We're actually going to the phones right now. You're on Sports Talk 1240.
This is Dan from Jersey.
Hey, Dan.
Which free agents do you see the Mets signing in the offseason to address their offensive needs?
You know, it's hard to say because, first of all, we don't know where the Mets are in terms of financial flexibility. You know, the last couple of years they've said they're going to go out in the offseason and spend money. They said that past year, but this past offseason they did not. I mean, they spent limited. They spent on Curtis Granderson and Young, who has been a bust. But Granderson has been a good signing. But, you know, back to your question, it's hard to say. I mean, I look at some guys that would make sense for the Mets. Melky Cabrera's statistics alone would have him getting a big contract, but because of his steroid past, and there will be a draft compensation as whoever signs him will lose a draft pick, probably like a first-round pick or whatever, second-round pick. So I think that would put some I think that puts a dent in his value. So I think the Mets would be a good fit for Melky. He's played in New York. He's proven that he's able to deal with the New York media and the pressure. But honestly, I think the Mets' big moves going forward at this next offseason and the offseasons in the future are not coming through free agency. I think it's going to be a trade. They have, like I was just talking about, an immense amount of, I would say surplus, but you can really never have enough pitching, as the old cliche goes, of young pitching. I would assume that their big acquisitions for a big player will come through trades. But as for a free agent signing for this next offseason, I would say Melky Cabrera maybe. Maybe Alex Rios, although there's a lot of concern about Rios throughout baseball. His power's down. He's playing in Texas, and he only has, what, 7-8 home runs this year. So, and then there's Michael Kadire, who's always been injury-prone. So, to me, I would say Melky seems like a good fit. He can play a corner outfield, fit perfectly, a good bat, a reliable outfielder. But other than that, I really don't, it's really hard to say because of the financial flexibility question.
That makes sense. All right, thank you.
You're welcome, Dan. Thanks for the call. Yeah, so the thing with the Mets is it's so hard to get a read on them. With the Yankees, we know. We know that the ownership and they're going to throw out money to players. We saw it last offseason. They've been doing it at the trade deadline. They're willing to spend money to win. The Mets, they keep saying every year that they're fine financially. They're in a good place. Their payroll does not show it. And until the Mets prove to their fans that they're willing to spend money, it's really hard to get a read. It's really hard to predict what the Mets are going to do because we have no idea where they are. Will they be willing to spend $15 million, $20 million on a star? Sandy Alderson, in his time here with the Mets, as the general manager, has shown no willingness at all to give big 5-year, $100 million contracts, 3-year, $60 million contracts. He's shown no willingness at all to do that. So to expect it all of a sudden, I don't know. I mean, it's really hard. And the thing about the Mets is it's sad because with all this young pitching, they really are one or two big bats away and maybe a reliever away from being not only a playoff team but a World Series contender. I mean, if these pitchers progress the way that they're expected to, and the young outfielders progress the way they're expected to, a couple moves, a shortstop, a big outfield bat, or a big first base bat, I mean, if you're not very happy with Lucas Duda, who has had a very good season, he's probably been the second best player offensive player on this team next to Daniel Murphy. I don't know. I mean, I really don't know what the Mets do. But it's really hard to predict because they have just not shown an ability and a willingness to spend money. And it's sad because they're playing in this New York market. I mean, it's crazy. And I for Mets fans, it's very frustrating. And they want the Wilpons to sell the team, but you know, look, that's probably not going to happen. And until the Mets go out and spend the big bucks, why? I mean, I can't sit here and say that I expect them to. They have to prove it, because it's been too long since they've spent that big money to actually expect them to spend the big money right now. And if I was trading, and that goes back to the whole Tulowitzki thing, why should we believe that the Mets are willing to trade for Troy Tulowitzki, give up a lot of prospects for him, pay him his 20 plus per year for, what is it, four or five years now left on that contract, to a guy that's injury prone? Every year he gets hurt. And he was leading the league in batting when he got hurt. He's not reached the amount of at bats that you need to contend for the batting title. And so he's leading league in batting, but it will not count. He cannot contend for the batting title because of his limited at-bats. No, I don't know. I mean, the Mets just, there's so many moves that they can make. There's so many options going forward. What will they do? It is really up in the air right now. But I want to thank a few people here, a few special thank yous. One goes out to Seth Walter of the New York Daily News for spending a few minutes with us to talk about the New York Jets. Really appreciate it, Seth, coming on and giving his insight. My engineer on the other side of the glass, Brian Graves, for pushing all the right buttons. The director of Sports Talk 1240, Rob Cowell, and to you, my listeners and callers, for Andrew Joseph and Sports Talk 1240 here on WGBB. Have a great night and a great week.
Expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.